Chapter 41, The True Story of Uncle Tolis. As they left the Ikagal behind, Christian looked up at the sun. It seemed to be about 4 o'clock. The horses were well rested and would have galloped with the least encouragement, but Tolis did not allow galloping. He rode on ahead, and when, after they had gone a li, he slackened his reins, this was the signal for the cavalcade to drop into the short, regular trot, which is the natural gait of Mongolian horses. In the beginning, Christian's horse was restive and tried to break away until he got used to the strange rider with the foreign smell. Then his hoofs took the same rhythm as the others, soft and even as a rapid timepiece. Tolis sang gently to himself. The path of meditation was more distinct now and looked almost like an ordinary caravan track, but it seemed to have been trodden more by hasty hoofbeats than by the thoughtful tread of camels, for it remained narrow. It had grown firm and a bit deeper, and the horses followed it as if running for their lives. The poodle trotted behind them, panting. After 3 hours, the sun went down. They had reached a high plateau, flat as a roof, with a wide panoramic view. A maze of dunes lay to the south, and to the north rose quiet old stone mountains. Between them ran the path of meditation, visible for miles ahead. "We shall rest," said Tolis, dismounting carefully. "I'll tie the horses myself. They don't know you well enough." The poodle lay down panting and exhausted. "Are you tired too?" asked Tolis. "We're not very fresh," Christian admitted. "It can't be helped," said Tolis sympathetically. "Don't let that trouble you," said Big Tiger. "Your nephew, Good Fortune, commanded us to stick it out, and we're obedient boys." "Did he command you to do that?" "Now I'll command you," said Tolis. "When people have to endure hardship, an empty stomach won't do. Take down the bags from the saddles." He watched their reaction with pleasure. He had forgotten nothing. Not only had they got double sheepskins over the hard saddles, but behind each saddle was a leather bag containing dried meat, wheat bread baked in fat, Mongolian cheese, garlic and honey cakes. They settled down to a glorious feast. "There's a good well 100 paces further on," said Tolis. "But we shall eat first. We have done the day's march of a caravan, and we've twice as long before us yet." Christian and Big Tiger sampled everything. Wheat bread, which they had not tasted for so long, seemed even more fragrant to their nostrils than the wild smell of the red meat which Tolis cut into slices with a sharp knife. "This is antelope meat," said Tolis, passing the knife to Christian and Big Tiger, who had quite forgotten their promise to beware if the old man took a knife in his hand. Half an hour passed, and the stars came out. Christian and Big Tiger were well fed and somewhat rested, and so was the poodle. Tolis unhobbled the horses, and the three mounted and rode to the well, which was really only a round hole in the ground. It was full to the brim, in fact overflowing a little, and the stars were mirrored in it, but no movement of a spring could be seen. "Human beings first," said Tolis, pushing the poodle away. He held the horses while Christian and Big Tiger drank from their silver bowls. The water was very cold, and they could only drink it slowly. The horses sneezed when Tolis let them loose. "Let them do as they please," he said to Christian. "They are Mongolian horses of the highest breeding, Kerulen horses, and they know themselves what is good for them and what is bad. Watch how little they drink, and how cautiously. They are not ordinary horses. You'll get to know them." Tolis blew a gentle blast on his horn. The horses raised their heads, left the well instantly, and came back to him. He gave each of them 1 or 2 honey cakes. "Beware of falling asleep," Tolis warned them as they mounted. "We shall be 7 hours in the saddle." "The poor dog," said Christian. "He'll be able to stick it out," said Tolis, "for the horses have to slow down in the dark." This was not noticeable in the beginning. The horses trotted along as in broad daylight, but when the plateau came to an end and the path of meditation led through sandhills and stony valleys, the trot slowed down and the horses often walked. Tolus gave them full freedom, neither urging nor restraining them. The night was pitch dark. One could only guess where the earth began, for there were no stars. There seemed, moreover, to be a mist in the air. When they had been in the saddle a couple of hours, a subtle change came. Nobody noticed it coming, but there it was. Sharp outlines seemed to divide sky and earth. There was the silent desert below and the sky above, and all was clear and solemn. Christian and Big Tiger, who had nearly fallen asleep several times, became all alert. It must have been long past midnight. The poodle was keeping up with them bravely. Tolus had not exaggerated the qualities of his horses in the least. When either of the boys was overcome by sleep and the pressure of his legs on the horse's sides slackened, the horse immediately ceased to trot. When the boy began to sway dangerously in the saddle, the horse stood still. Then Tolus would turn around and call out kindly, "Oh ho, little son!" At this, Christian and Big Tiger would feel ashamed, but as it happened to both of them, it wasn't so bad. Once they passed through a stony gorge where three trees stood in a line. A well, thought Christian, but Tolus passed by, and the horse's trot began to quicken. They rode through a broad valley between hills to the east and mountains to the west, and the ground was level. The ground rose again, the rocks had smooth, round edges, and the path ran into a deep ravine. The horses picked their way cautiously downhill, holding back with their hindquarters spread. "Sagan Burgesson!" cried Tolus, and again there were trees. Tall desert grass reached up to their stirrups, and when a little stream crossed the path, Tolus halted. 150 li, he said. "Little sons, you've ridden bravely." "Please sit down," pleaded Big Tiger, when he saw how Tolus staggered. "Compass Mountain and I know what's to be done." Their own legs were stiff, but they limbered up when they moved about. They unsaddled the horses, but left the saddle pads on them. Then they went to collect firewood and brought it to a nice smooth place on the sand. "What are you doing?" asked Tolus. "We're making a heated kong of sand," explained Christian. Tolus said he did not know such a thing and was curious to see how it was done. "And we don't know your fire lighter and are curious to see how it works," said Big Tiger. "Matches go out, or you don't have them when you want them," said Tolus, "but there's always stone and steel and some kindling to be found." He struck fire. The tinder caught the spark. Tolus blew on it. Then he took a bundle of dry Derisen grass, and soon the fire was blazing brightly and evenly. The high flames shot into the darkness, lighting up the silent trees, which stood like the wings of a stage around an exciting play. "Is so much wood necessary for what you want to make?" asked Tolus. "Yes, it is," said Christian. "You'll soon see what it's for," said Big Tiger. As they had no shovels, they used their hands to cover the glowing embers with sand, so it took much longer to make the sand bed than that night in Durban Mott. "Sleep well," said Christian and Big Tiger, as they invited Tolus to lie down on the warm sand. "Little sons, this is a splendid thing," said Tolus. He covered himself up with his coat, and as Big Tiger now had a coat, too, which reached to his toes, they were all comfortable. Christian put the pistol under his fur cap, intending to sleep on it, but found it too uncomfortable. "I believe," whispered Big Tiger, "that neither of us need stay awake." "There's nothing to fear," whispered Christian, and he lay the pistol down between himself and Big Tiger. "Tolus is a good uncle." They both fell asleep with easy minds. The moon rose, but it was a dim little crescent. That did not matter, however, as the dawn came immediately afterwards. But it didn't awaken Christian and Big Tiger. Only when Christian felt someone blowing on his face and tapping him gently on the shoulder did he open his eyes. It was full day, the sun was shining, and the poodle was lying beside him. "Are you finished sleeping?" inquired Tolus kindly. "Yes, we're finished," said Christian, standing up promptly. "How is your worthy health?" inquired Big Tiger. Tolis frowned. "Didn't I tell you to drop that nonsense?" he said irritably. "Come and take tea." "Tea?" exclaimed Big Tiger. "Yes, tea," said Tolis. "There's not much, but there's some." He sat down beside a little fire. He had stuck two forked sticks in the ground and laid a green branch across them. On this branch hung a little copper flask in which Tolis had carried an iron ration of water. It was already boiling. Each of the boys was able to fill his bowl twice, for Tolis had already breakfasted. He had also let the horses loose. Now he sat smoking on a saddle pad. "That's a fine big pistol you've got," he remarked. Christian slowly chewed a mouthful of meat before answering. "Your nephew, the esteemed Mr. Good Fortune, lent it to me. No doubt he's very anxious about you."
"He's anxious about all of us," asserted Big Tiger.
"As regards me," said Tolis, "I heard him saying something different."
"He only said that," explained Big Tiger, "because his mind was confused. Your iron doorbell fell on his head and hurt him."
"His pride caused that," said Tolis. "Why did he stand up on the chest?"
"Because we asked him to," said Christian.
"What nonsense," snorted Tolis. "Letting you pay him homage as if he were a chief?" He puffed vigorously at his pipe. "Served him right," he added. Christian and Big Tiger did not dare to contradict. Tolis was opposed to all politeness and convention, and that was that. So they went on eating in silence.
"Do you know how to use that thing?" asked Tolis, looking intently at the pistol.
Christian went on chewing, but Big Tiger hurriedly swallowed his bite and said, "My friend Compass Mountain is a celebrated pistol shot."
"If that's so," said Tolis, "you must show me how you do it."
"Showing is much too dangerous," replied Big Tiger.
"Are you afraid?" asked Tolis.
"Not very often, but we are sometimes," Christian admitted.
"We're a bit afraid now, for instance," said Big Tiger.
"Of whom?" asked Tolis, straight out.
"Of the pistol," replied Big Tiger, smiling politely.
"That's a pity," said Tolis, "for I was going to ask Compass Mountain to do me a favor. He's a foreigner from beyond the seas, and I thought it would be easier for him to do what I want, especially as we're alone in the desert."
Christian and Big Tiger looked around apprehensively, but there was no stir in the Derrison grass, and nobody was hiding behind a tree.
"We'd like very much to oblige you," said Christian.
"We take on difficult commissions, too," asserted Big Tiger.
"I have one for you," said Tolis. "Listen now. If we come to a certain place and meet someone who looks like a wicked man, and if I say, 'Aim at that man, Compass Mountain,' will he fall down dead?"
"If he's a long-lived man, he mightn't at once," said Big Tiger solemnly.
"Shooting is a bad business," declared Christian. "Good Fortune says there might be unpleasant consequences."
"Not with this man," Tolis assured him. "You could shoot him without hesitation. I mean, a man like that isn't much loss anyway."
"We have already got a similar commission," Big Tiger confessed. "Two at the same time would be too much. Besides, we haven't many cartridges."
Tolis shook his head with an air of displeasure.
"My commission deserves priority," he said. "I'll explain it to you. Did Good Fortune tell you who I am?"
Christian and Big Tiger nodded solemnly.
Then Big Tiger said cautiously, "Your nephew told us that once, on seeing a kitchen knife, you lost the prudence which is necessary in handling kitchen knives."
"That's right," replied Tolis, "but people generally know only half a story, and they give it out as the whole."
"Please tell us the missing half," said Christian.
"Don't leave us longer in ignorance," said Big Tiger.
"Well, it can't be helped," said Tolis indifferently. He filled his pipe with green tobacco, stroked his beard, and drew his hand across his forehead.
"I once had an inn in Angsi," he began. "And I had a wife and two sons. I stood all day cooking in the kitchen, for I was a good cook and had many customers. My wealth increased, and I was a happy man until 7 years ago. Then came misfortune, and almost overnight, all that was beautiful and peaceful was torn from me. Misfortune took the form of a man with a black mustache hanging over the corners of his mouth and domineering eyes. The moment he entered, I noticed there was something which did not please him. A lot of people were there, eating and drinking, but he went haughtily up to the center table and said, "Make way, I want a meal," and pushed aside the glass of a Mongol who was sitting there. "Well, that's all right, that's what happens. The Mongol is a barbarian, and he's a fine gentleman." I brought him what he wanted, bamboo shoots, eggs with fir blossom, gammon of ham, and partridge. The Mongol watches him eating, his eyes nearly popping out of his head. But it wasn't with envy, it was with something else. The fine gentleman goes on eating and notices nothing. After a while, he stands up and comes into the kitchen to me. "Are you alone?" he asks. And I say, "We're alone. What do you want of me?" "I hear," he says, very insinuatingly, "that your eldest son is getting married. I've got a gift for a bride, just a chance purchase, a wonderfully beautiful hair ornament." "Let me see it," I said, laying down my meat knife. The gentleman takes a package from his pocket. He unwraps it and lays before me on the table two golden hair clasps, the like of which I had never seen. "They could be reworked," says he casually. "It's Mongolian jewelry, and perhaps not to your taste, but it's pure gold. I think about 2,000 silver bahts would be the price." As he says this, the door opens, and the Mongol comes in. He sees the jewelry on the table, and he turns pale. The fine gentleman turns round angrily. The two look at each other, and the Mongol's face becomes distorted with fury. "Now I know you," he snarls, and wants to lunge at him. But the fine gentleman snatches the knife from the meat bench and drives it into the Mongol. Then he snatches up the jewelry and rushes out the door. "Murder! Murder!" he shouts. "Hold the man! Catch him! I'm going for the police!" And he's gone. After a while, he comes back with the police officer and a posse of soldiers. The officer cross-examines me, and knowing me, he says, "That's all right." They arrest the stranger, but he's no longer got any gold on him, nothing but a few silver batses, just enough to pay his bill. So I was brought before the chief magistrate in Suzhou. When I got there, the fine gentleman had disappeared, and on the chief magistrate's table lay a long, elaborate indictment, which read, "Conspiring with robber bands, murder for the purpose of eliminating witness of unlawful actions." The chief magistrate at once closed the public hearing and ordered a secret trial. My friends and the police officer of Anxi were sent away. I was alone, and I was lucky not to be executed. It was stated in the accusation that the murdered Mongol was one of the venerable chief's band. "Strike that out," said the chief magistrate scornfully. "Dampignac avenges murder himself." "Read on," he ordered, and the court scribe read. "Leaving aside the murder, the crime of conspiring with thieves and murderers must be expiated." So they cut off my toes, and when I returned home a few weeks afterward, I found my inn burned down and my wife and two sons murdered. My friends no longer knew me, and the district magistrate closed the door of the yamen against me. Those who owed me money brought it unasked, and I left Anxi as an outcast. I rode out of the city gate on an ass, intending to go to Xinjiang. The town was hardly out of sight when a Mongol came up to me, but as there were travelers within sight, he took his hand off his dagger and said, "Follow me." I rode with him, and when the Silk Road was out of sight, I said, "I'm not the man you're looking for. Do not try to save your life," cried the Mongol. "We know that you have stabbed one of our men to death. All the world knows it." "The world knows only half," I said, and then I told him the missing half, and now you also know it.
"We thank you for your trust," said Big Tiger. "But what happened then?" asked Christian.
"Nothing more happened," said Tolis. "The Mongol, his name was Moonlight, brought me to the stronghold of the venerable chief, and every morning on our journey there he went on his knees and begged my forgiveness for what had happened at Anxi, for he had been the ringleader. The venerable chief made me tell him everything. I had to describe the ornaments exactly. He wanted to know how many turquoises were in the hair clasps. When I answered, there were 4 in each of them and a big one in the middle. He pressed his lips together till they went white, and he looked like a dying man. "Would you know that man again?" he asked me. "Yes, I would," I said, "even if he had become as old as a ghost." "Unfortunately, I can't send you to the Silk Road," said the venerable chief, "for everyone knows you there, and Shong Ma would keep out of your way." "Shong Ma?" cried Christian and Big Tiger. "Yes, that's his name," said Tolis. "Do you know him?" "We've heard of him," said Big Tiger cautiously. 7 stars told us he murdered the venerable chief's family," said Christian. "Yes, that's the man," cried Tolis, "and I've been waiting all these years for him to come along the path of meditation one day, for that was my task. Often the Mongols caught a man who had a beard and dark sinister eyes. Then they'd call me to the castle, and when I'd say, 'No, that's not he,' they'd let the man go. But 4 days ago, when Moonlight and Thunderbolt were with me, Moonlight said, 'Give up your post, for we'll catch him in a few days.' I asked Moonlight to tell me what he intended doing, but he made a secret of it. 'You'll see Shong Ma,' he said, 'before the new moon is full. But whether dead or alive, I do not know.'" "Honored old father," began Big Tiger. "Drop that," cried Tolis angrily. "Permit me to insist this time," said Big Tiger. "My friend Compass Mountain and I can no longer bear not being allowed to honor you as you deserve." "I am what I am," cried Tolis, "a criminal whose toes have been cut off." "He who does not praise himself and does not boast of his merits," said Big Tiger, "is truly a modest man. But he who takes on himself crimes which he has not committed commits an outrage against himself."
"Who says that?" growled Tolis.
"My grandfather says it," replied Big Tiger, "and you may believe him, for he knows the things of this world. Please tell us your worthy surname."
"I have relinquished it because my family cast me out.
You must call me by the same name as before." Christian and Big Tiger stood up and bowed very deeply. Raising their clenched fists to their foreheads, they said, "Worthy old Tolis, we beg you to accept the promise of our filial obedience in all things."
"Enough, enough," cried Tolis,
but he stood up and returned the bow. Christian and Big Tiger finished their breakfast in much happier spirits. Tolis looked on and said benignly, "You've wormed it out of me," and he even smiled. "We must ride on," he continued, "to get to the meeting place by evening."
"Whom are we meeting?" asked Christian.
"If it's in order to inquire." "I do not know who's coming," declared Tolis. "Someone is to bring us fresh horses at the hidden well. You know one can't keep riding the same horses."
"We understand," said Big Tiger, "and now we'll fetch the horses."
"You needn't," said Tolis, and he blew on his little brass horn. The horses came one after the other. "Douse the fire," he said. "There's another grassy valley not far from here. There was a fire there last year, and since then I haven't seen any more animals around." Christian fetched water and doused the fire. Then he put the copper flask, freshly filled, into Tolis's saddlebag. Tolis rode ahead as the day before. The morning sun was shining, the horses' coats glistened, and the whole world seemed warm and friendly. As they left the valley of Tsagamburgasun, where there was no grass and no water, they passed a solitary black poplar. Big Tiger wrote on a piece of paper from Christian's notebook, "The mystery has been cleared up. Your uncle is a pillar of virtue. We wish you a happy journey." Then Christian wrote his beautiful name, Compass Mountain, underneath, and Big Tiger signed it too. "What are you doing?" Tolis called back, noticing the halt. "We're leaving a greeting for good fortune," said Big Tiger. Christian made a cut in the trunk of the poplar and fastened the paper in such a way into it that good fortune couldn't miss it when he would ride by. Tolis muttered something about an unnecessary nuisance, but when they caught up with him, he said kindly, "Thank you, little sons, for greeting my unworthy nephew, though he does not deserve such devotion."
Christian and Big Tiger protested, but Tolis said, "There is something which you do not know." "If you mean," began Big Tiger cautiously, "that good fortune was once a red beard, we know it," said Christian. Tolis stopped his horse and let Christian and Big Tiger come up to him. For quite a while, nothing could be heard but the clinking of the bridles and the snorting and stamping of the horses. The poodle looked on from a safe distance. When Tolis still remained silent, Christian said apologetically, "We found that out in the course of time." "Being a redbeard is an honorable profession," added Big Tiger. "Your worthy nephew deserves little blame." Tolis laughed. "Little sons," he cried, and laughed again. "You seem to be a proper pair of young scamps. You know all sorts of things. But tell me this," he added seriously. "Do you know why the venerable chief wants to see you? Has it got anything to do with Shong Ma?" Christian started. Now that Tolis had asked, they had to say yes or no, for there wasn't any other answer. "It can't be helped," thought Christian desperately. "We shall have to tell a lie." He looked at Big Tiger, but Big Tiger was looking surprised and saying, "We haven't got an appointment with Shong Ma, but with a certain Mr. Ma, and as it's urgent, Moonlight is lending us his help. Perhaps you know Mr. Ma. He's a caravan leader." "Yes, I know Ma," said Tolis. "He's a petty, stingy fellow. Whenever he travels on the Silk Road, he stops off at my hut. He should have been a merchant on his own account long since, but he lacks firmness in the cheekbones for that. What does he want with you?" "We want something of him," said Big Tiger. "The soldier Affliction doesn't want to be a soldier anymore, so Ma has promised to help him to become something else." "Ah," said Tolis, disappointed, "that's a business of no great consequence. But the venerable chief, what does he want with you?" "Perhaps," said Christian, with a breath of relief, "he wants to know how things are doing with General Wu and how matters stand in the world. We've just come from the war, and we were present when General Wu conquered the Nanku Pass, and that probably is of interest to the venerable chief." "That may be," said Tolis thoughtfully, "but he wanted to know everything. Moonlight told me that a horseless car was stolen from you," he said. "What about that?" "We just lent it out," asserted Big Tiger. "We're to get it back in Sing Sing Ha, or perhaps even before we get there. And then you must come and ride with us, honored old uncle, for you want to go to Sing Kyang, don't you?" "There's no question of that yet," he said. "We shall ride on now." "May I venture to ask what road we're taking?" asked Christian. "There isn't any road," Tolis explained. "The hidden well should be reached exactly at midday from here. The Mongols ride through the pathless desert as if they were on the Silk Road. I once tried to do it, too, but I got lost, and was lucky to find myself back in Sagan Burgasun. Since then, I make a detour. Do you see the mountain over there in the west?" "It's very far away," said Big Tiger, "but we see it." "We shall have to go over there," explained Tolis, "because from the foot of that mountain one can see a saddle gap in the line of hills. Then I shall know which way to turn, for one must have a landmark." "I've got a compass," said Christian shyly. "Ah!" cried Tolis joyfully. "But do you know how to use it?" he asked dubiously. "My friend is called Compass Mountain," Big Tiger explained proudly, "because he possesses the highest understanding of compasses." "How could I forget that?" cried Tolis, and he begged Christian to take over the lead. "Your knowledge will spare us 3 painful hours wading through deep shifting sand." Christian said nothing, but took out the compass and glanced at the map. He was relieved to find Sagan Borgeson on it. There was a blue ripple there, indicating water. One could see the brown shaded cutting of the valley, and even the path of meditation, though it was a very thin line. To the north were mountains, and in the west there were also mountains. But in the south the map showed nothing but white and yellow. There was no blue ripple, only a few mountains, and sprawled over them the words Boro Ola. Quite far off, more than 200 li, Christian estimated, 2 crossed hammers marked the words Old Gold Region. But that was all. "That's going to be difficult," thought Christian.
folding away the western sheet and taking the compass in his hand. "Yabona!" he cried as confidently as he could, and then he rode on ahead. Tolis kept up with him for a while to observe what he did, and he noticed that it was difficult. Before them lay a desolate, dead desert land, covered with stones and fine sand. The sand was yellow, the stones were yellow, and the ground which they covered was yellow, too. One looked into endless space, as on the ocean. The horses started to trot, but their hoofs were hardly audible. Christian watched the compass anxiously. The needle pointed northward, where there were sufficient landmarks anyhow, to the south, where the end of the needle pointed, and where the figure 180 was written, there was nothing but bare desert. Here and there lay a fairly large rock, on which Christian took his bearings, but it was soon passed, and another landmark had to be found. It was good that the horses kept of themselves to the direction one had set on, so Christian could let his reins hang, hold the compass in both hands, and watch the wavering needle. When it stood still, and its end showed somewhere midway between the horse's ears, he needed only a bit of luck to find a rock or a sand drift ahead. When he found nothing, he just had to wait and watch the needle. "It's strenuous," said Tolis. "I see that from your face." "One must concentrate," replied Christian. "That makes all the difference." At this, Tolis let him ride on undisturbed, for he did not want to break in on anyone's thoughts. A few times he turned round and looked back at Sagan Borgeson, but the mountains were becoming smaller, the valley cutting was growing indistinct, and Tolis again looked straight in front of him, watching out for the saddle gap, which he knew. When 4 hours had passed in this way, he became uneasy. The smooth ground had changed to rough. There were many big stones, and Christian was glad of these. They were going downhill, too, and to the right, where the sun was, a faint ridge of hills was emerging, just a shadowy suggestion. "Halt!" cried Tolis. "We're somewhere where we shouldn't be." Christian made no reply. He looked at the compass and then looked back. The track of the horses was as if drawn with a ruler, and quite far away there was a dark speck. "Poor dog," thought Christian, and he was glad that Tolis had called halt. "Where should we be?" inquired Big Tiger. "Please give us your opinion." "Somewhere else," answered Tolis, "where there's a saddle gap which can be seen a long way off." "Perhaps it will still come," said Big Tiger, trying to be reassuring. "No, it won't," replied Tolis. "On my roundabout route, I took 7 hours to get to the hidden well. The Mongols say they need only 4. 4 hours have passed." "We're approaching from another side," Christian suggested. "That's why we can't see the saddle gap which you're looking for." "It has to be seen," insisted Tolis, "for there isn't any other landmark." "Dog!" cried Big Tiger. "Poor dog! Are you tired?" The poodle came trotting slowly along. His red tongue was hanging out of his black mouth, and his breath was coming in short jerks. Tolis shook his head regretfully. "Dogs are all right for camel caravans," he said, "but they can't keep up with horses." "He'll recover if we wait a few minutes," said Christian. "All right," muttered Tolis unwillingly, and he looked at the poodle, which was standing by, undecided. "Lie down," said Christian. "Rest," said Big Tiger. But the poodle didn't heed this well-meant advice. He wagged his tail, then ran on, his tongue hanging out, sniffing. He was no ordinary dog. "Yabona!" cried Christian joyfully. "We'll be there at once. The dog smells water." Tolis shook his head, and his gray pigtail swung around. "Impossible," he cried. "The hidden well is covered with planks, and there's a lot of sand over the planks. It's a secret well, and only the gentlemen of the mountains know it, for it was they who dug it." "All the same," said Christian, "we should ride on." "Very well," said Tolis indifferently. "One mistake more won't make much difference." The poodle ran on ahead. The route continued downward, and the ridge of hills to the right grew higher. At their feet lay deep sand. Finally, the horses had to slow down to a walk, but the poodle ran faster and faster. He disappeared when the ridge of hills bent westward, and suddenly they heard barking.
blind enthusiasm, muttered Tolis.
No, cried Christian, but then he gripped his reins and pulled his horse back, for behind the bend were two blue tents before which the dog stood barking. There were horses there and men going to and fro, and one of them stood and stared astonished at the dog, who, torn between flight and aggression, was trying to frighten him with his barking. Out of the bigger of the two tents, which was decorated with lucky symbols in white, a man emerged, dressed in a white sheepskin coat with a blue sash. "Dog, come here!" he shouted.
"That man," said Big Tiger, bending over his saddle, "is Moonlight," continued Christian in a tone of relief.